Okay, that's over.
Oh, fuck me.
I have no idea what to think, because you gasped and clapped and made a few weird sounds while we were doing predictions.
I can't believe it.
Prepare yourself for sheer fucking hubris.
Sheer fucking hubris.
Hello, and welcome to Sheer Fucking Hubris, the weekly podcast where three friends and Star Trek fans watch an episode.
I don't know if you can call me a Star Trek fan much more, much longer, but I'm sorry, I interrupted. Go ahead.
God, I swear, the way that we've been going at each other the last few episodes, I don't know how much longer you're going to be able to call us friends either.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. All right, Joe Bob.
All right, well, fuck it, Willie. No. This week we watched Eden Alicia, and you know, I was disappointed that Janet Reno didn't make another appearance, but I liked the episode. All right. Willie, unless you found some issues with this show, with this episode, this might be a really short podcast. What did you think?
I don't even know where to start. I thought it was that they're still trying, right? They're trying to get back. It still felt like something that was more Star Trek-y. But they're walking a fine line with this one, and a lot of it didn't make sense. You know, clearly we are going to treat this like Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past, where I guess we're going to have seven dungeons, and we're going to go through each one. And you know, if we don't go to the first one and get the boomerang, we're not going to be able to solve the second dungeon. So we're going to have to go through these sequentially, I guess.
Well, yeah,
but so
you
that's
do not want to go to Turtle Rock
without a fire rod.
Yeah.
So we're gonna do it, but I mean, I guess it's gonna be a more interesting arc than Klingon War. I guess was an arc. I guess.
I mean, so yeah, I think it. Yes, it will be.
But like I said, it felt more Star Trek-y. It still feels more Star Trek-y. And they're still peppering in some things to try and bring this back to Star Trek. So if you notice, like, the doorbell sound at Pike's Ready Room is like the classic Star Trek sound.
Pike has a ready room. It's an actual friggin' ready room.
Yeah, which he made a point, which I think that was in the last episode, but he made a point of saying, like, hey, this doesn't encourage discourse. So,
well, we got at least two more Pike moments where he just looked at the camera and said, please, guys,
give
I
us
apologize for last year.
what were they? Obviously.
Well, at one point, Saru's, I guess they were both in, with regards to the spore drive, where Saru's explaining the spore drive to him and says, well, our navigator's out of commission because when he spliced tardigrade DNA into himself, it kind of broke all the genetic engineering treaties and ordinances that the Federation has. And Pike's like, well, tardigrade? Really? Saru's like, he had to be there. Yeah. Like, yeah. And then Saru goes on and continues to try to explain it. And he says, you know what? Fuck it, Saru. If you're telling me that we're going to go skipping across the galaxy on a goddamn mushroom highway, I'll just take it on faith. Fuck it, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty funny.
That was basically him looking at the camera and saying, shut the fuck up, Joe Bob, about this stupid ass drive. I know it doesn't make any goddamn sense, but just take it on faith. Just go with it. The angels invented this highway. Whatever. So, you know, I didn't mind it. Normally I say, stick to your guns. But when they were this fucking stupid, I don't mind it a little bit of crawfishing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and like I said, we're definitely getting some of those little, and they're just peppering them in. They're not making them too up in your face. I mean, maybe that one was.
Those were pretty up in your face.
That one's up in your face.
Yeah.
But like I said, the door sounds, the chime sounds, some of the bridge sounds are starting to become a little more familiar. And so those things are a little more subtle. But you can't, there's no subtlety to be had with the Tartar Dog, right?
No.
You had to face that one head on.
Right.
At least it was funny.
There were only three things in this whole episode that I just absolutely hated. And that's a really good number for Discovery. So,
But what were they? Like the plot, the setting, and the resolution?
No. I was fine with all those. The three things would be Ensign, followed by Sylvia, and then Tilly.
Oh my God. Christ. She's too much. She's too
much. How the fuck is she getting more annoying than she was in season one? Is that even possible?
But you know, I feel like they tried to bracket it well. They actually introduced a character apparition who may be even more annoying than Tilly.
Oh my God! Even Tilly's hallucinations are fucking unbearable.
Yeah, that was terrible. That was another one that if you didn't see that one coming, that was telegraphed. You're right up there with missing all those other zingers.
Oh, no kidding. No kidding. A Tyler Durden moment. This was not.
So, so you apparently felt better about the episode than I did. And maybe some of my things were a little nitpicky. So let's talk about the episode.
It's Discovery. We're grading on a curve.
It's like organic chemistry too, huh? a failing grade will get you by in this class right now.
Right. An F is good for a C. C plus, you know?
Yeah. So, all right. Well, then let's dive right in. So we get our second signal, right? Now that we saw the first one, we start getting the second signal.
Which is actually the eighth signal. Is that right?
I thought it was like two of seven. Like, I thought we still only had seven.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is...
It showed all seven. Signals are there, but none of them are actively transmitting except one at a time.
Okay.
Somehow, I guess. Look, take it on faith, man. Take it on faith.
I'm taking it on faith. I just want to understand this goddamn show.
Well, I guess I should ask, which faith are you taking it on? Christianity, Islam, Wiccan, Buddhism, Hinduism,
I'm familiar Shinto. With the text of all our religions. All of them.
I liked Wakanda's bow out though. She was like, my family's non-believers. Like, you're still not going to know all this other stuff and have some kind of basic knowledge of it.
She's by like, the way,
I'm stepping this one out.
That was fantastic, man. Pike is as smooth as butter. Like, he is... He knows what he can and can't say. He's like, oh, okay, they don't use technology. Do we have anybody that grew up in the hood? He like looks over at Wakanda and he's like, you know what, Burnham, you're more familiar with the crew. Why don't you pick if there's someone who didn't exactly have access to all the technology? She's like, yeah, Wakanda's from the ghetto. She's from the street. She can handle herself. I was like, way to go, Pike.
Yeah. Well, we're starting to get some little characteristics of all our characters, right? For instance, Wakanda is from the hood. She knows how to break out of a basement. Demeter apparently has been flying since she was like, I don't know, 8, 9 years old. Sylvia Tilly had annoying friends even when she was in sixth grade or whatever grade it was. So we're getting some, we're getting some flavor to these characters now. Bot got some more lines.
I don't remember what it was. It wasn't anything important.
It wasn't important, no. But
Tokyo Reese likes to shoot stuff. The tactical guy.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was like, when they're like, we got to deal with this ring, what can we do? He's like, I can fire phasers. That's my thing. That's what I do.
Yeah. Look, if you only got one thing, you damn well better do it well. So
it's like Galaxy Quest. I heard what the computer said. I have one job on this ship.
All right. So I can't even remember where this episode actually starts. So they're getting the signal, and I guess if you go to warp, your sensor range is better, or it reacts more quickly.
You get a red shift
somehow. Okay,
because now you're moving towards it.
Ah, okay. The old Doppler effect, huh?
Yeah, and we brought back sonar, which I wish they would fucking quit using sonar in space.
I know.
But whatever. No, whatever.
We broke it even more, though. We're like, all right, well, now we're just going to speed up so the waves get there faster and get back. It's still, what was it, 150 light years?
Yeah.
We didn't speed up that 51, much.
No, it was 150 years in maximum warp. It was 51,000 light years.
Yeah, so we still didn't speed up that. If you can speed up that much, just go there, for crying out loud. So
51,000 light years away, it took about 10 seconds. So
yeah,
it's traveling, whatever, 50,000 light. It did 100,000 light year round trip in 10 seconds.
Yeah.
So they were moving 10,000 light years a second.
Yeah.
Which I think is pretty fast.
Yes. I mean, if you could go to warp for 5 seconds and generate that much velocity, it seems to me like you could have just gone there pretty fast, too. But,
there's no way they could go to maximum warp that quickly. But science is not a thing.
We had to show off some technology and some good ideas, some bright ideas, so we hammer down.
Right, not before Tilly's like, oh, I'm sorry, I was using your console for my homework, and I'm sorry.
She's so annoying.
I'm like, God damn it, you may only be an ensign, but you are a fucking Starfleet officer, and you are terrible at it.
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up, Tilly.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I know she really is terrible, but so we figure out where it goes or where we're gonna have to go to get there.
Yeah, we make a point of saying there's no way we can get there in Saru because Saru likes to break regulations. He's like, we could just sport drive there, but Starfleet in all its wisdom decommissioned the sport drive.
Yeah, and apparently
when he says decommissioned it, he doesn't really mean they decommissioned it, because that usually to me involves like
taking it apart,
putting it in a state that's not ready to be used. It's like, how long will it take to recommission it? 10 minutes.
Go wake Stamets up.
And Pike's like, well, they gave us permission in the Klingon War, and this is like basically a Klingon War. So
this part was annoying me so badly. It's like, we tried to fix a lot of things and bring it back to Star Trek, but one of the most glaring things to me about season one was the blatant disregard for authority or orders or protocol. And that one we're just going to go ahead and still double down on that one. Let's just go ahead and do it.
You can say that, but buddy, they stick to the first order in this one.
Yes, you're right. They did. Absolutely. So,
I think the fact is they follow orders when the plot requires it.
just like technology. Technology does what it needs to when the plot requires it. So
no kidding.
They jump they jump the spore drive, which, by the way, my favorite quote of the whole episode was Saru going, "You never forget your first time." That was, I got a good chuckle out of that one. And,
boy, so they really like that shot of the Discovery saucer spinning.
Yeah.
Because they've used it about 3 times now. I guess they spent a lot of money on it.
It's plausible.
This show's really defined by weird camera angles and weird colors and weird schemes and a lot of things, though. So, I mean, that, like the Discovery was in the Z-axis, rotate, you know, around the planet somehow in one of those camera angles. It wasn't, like, above it. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
I mean, if you're in orbit, you're above the planet.
Well, but it weren't above it in, like, a normal orientation, I guess what I was saying, the way the camera angle displayed it. But,
right.
I don't know, like I said, maybe they weren't.
Normally, you always see them where they're on the radial plane.
Yeah. Now, I guess to be fair, you can orbit a body, you know, in any orientation. But so.
Well, when the damn thing flips around in a, you know, in a heartbeat, it doesn't matter. You're just one jump away from being, whatever. Fuck it.
Yeah, but anyway. so we get there. Stamets is worried about going into the network because the network's still inside of him, and I guess we are led to believe that he probably saw. Not Cuba Gooding again, because he walks out, and Tilly tries to. You know, Tilly is about as annoying as the little cricket girl on Guardians of the Galaxy 2, who's like can adjust emotions and stuff.
Mantis?
Maybe that's kind of what they were going for. Mantis, was that her name?
I think so.
Yeah,
weird. I liked girl. Mantis though,
but.
She was all right. Of course, I know.
She was annoying.
From the comic books. I mean, not. I think to put her on a Tilly scale is really harsh.
That's harsh. Okay.
Yeah, but anyway. Yeah, what the hell was up with Tilly being like, you saw not Cuba Gooding? And I would think that would make you happy. And
yeah,
Sam is there like, what the fuck is wrong with you, Tilly? No, it doesn't make me happy. I actually kind of liked his little speech about how, you know, the mushrooms have taught me that there's life and death. And I'm supposed to be on this side of it, but I don't know. Yeah, maybe he's got
nothing's ever really gone.
Well, okay, not that part. I didn't like that part. But anyway, maybe we're foreshadowing that he's going to get addicted to the spore mycelial network and try to go on the wrong side of death.
Or maybe he's going to try and maybe his plan is to kill himself so he can go in the network with. He's going to take the red pill. And get inside of the network with not Cuba Gooding. Mm. Then they're going to have to go rescue them both. It's going to be like Barclay's transporter phobia.
Whatever. Anyway, we're at the planet. And
yeah.
To your point about technology working and then sometimes not working, we're in fucking orbit and we say, hey, where's the signal coming from? Call it up on the screen. Zoom in and magnify, and we can see people walking in out of a church, but we can't goddamn read the registry number on a crash ship.
Like, I can't believe they didn't have Saru, like, super duper vision it again. That would have been great. Like, we just forgot all about that in the last episode, and we decide, all right, zoom in and enhance.
I think Glenn wrote that. Did you notice the director for this episode?
Yeah.
It was Jonathan Frakes again, wasn't it?
Yeah. So yeah. Glenn probably wrote that, and then Riker was probably like, wait, what? What?
Yeah.
No, just see the enhanced and magnifier. Did it all the time on the D. Like, fuck that. That's stupid. Why would you?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, man. I guess it could have been worse. They could have pulled out the whole repair cameras. Snapshots.
Why the fuck did they write that? Was so stupid.
So stupid.
That was so stupid to write that when you have shit that will.
So
as right, well established tech that you could like zoom in on people from orbit with your, you know, Google Earth map.
Yeah.
Well, whatever. There's 11,000 people there because it was apparently a really big church. It was like the Six Flags over Jesus outside of Memphis that you passed.
Fuck! You know?
Well, the 11,000 was on the whole planet, right? It wasn't just in that little village, Mecca.
Right.
And so, but
you know what? I wish this had been a two-parter. Because there are a lot of questions I had about this shit that I would like to know. Like, did the 11,000 come from different points in time? Like, were they all taken at the end of World War III?
I assumed the one church propagated them all. But,
dog, so I don't know if you know a lot about human breeding. Like, I know that you are doing it at a pretty quick rate, personally. But to go from like the amount of people that would fit inside that church to 11,000 in 200 years, that's some heavy duty fucking.
Well, I guess it was a Catholic church, maybe.
That
probably would have helped it.
So, yeah, and I mean, it's all Earth religions, so they're probably Mormon too. Yeah. So they got probably all got like seven wives.
Poor bastard. So,
assuming that they rescued humans from different points, at least around the globe, if not different points in time, but whatever.
That probably makes sense. That probably makes sense. But, look,
I mean, really, the reason there was 11,000 was so they couldn't just like beam them on the ship and they had to come up with the donut maneuver. But anyway, we'll get there.
Donut maneuver.
We'll get there.
So, all right, so here's what kills me about this show, right? So we're like, oh, well, this is, first off, they figure out it's been on a loop for 200 years.
How does that technology work?
Yeah.
And how what the fuck is audiophonic degradation? How can you figure it out?
Is there a loop counter?
Saru analyzed the audiophonic degradation. It follows a Fibonacci sequence and sees, no, seriously, how the fuck did that work? Yeah, bro, her is like, I got a distress signal, and Pike's like, shields up, red alert. It's like, shit. He learned from the first season too, where they never bothered raising their shields. But anyway,
but he did at least go to yellow alert in the last episode. But
well, he went straight to red alert this time.
Yeah, well, it's a distress signal. Why wouldn't you? So they figure out this thing's been on a loop for 200 years, and humans haven't colonized out, you know, 200 years. So he knows something is afoot, right? So like, oh, well, this is a pre-warp society. We need to keep a low profile. So let's beam directly into like the town square. Did you notice they beamed 70 kilometers away from the Pavan satellite Crystal Dick.
Well, that was because the Crystal Dick was interfering with their line of sight.
They beamed directly into the town. You know?
Well, they had eyes in the sky, man. They could see no one was around.
Yeah, because they were all in the fields. So
yeah, that's right. They were.
So they beam in. They go to this church.
And I love that. That's the first thing that Jacob asks is.
But hey, okay, but this annoys me because he walks. He's like, "Why aren't you in the fields?" And so, like, you immediately get this character, and you think, like, "Oh, this is some kind of like very hierarchical society," and he's like, "Hey, look, everybody's supposed to be in the fields right now working. What are you doing?" And then, like, within 45 seconds of the episode, he just totally flips, and like, look, you totally forget all about that persona.
They wanted to bring him in with a opening line that would completely set a tone that would never be followed and give you absolutely zero information about this character and, in fact, lead you in the complete opposite direction. It's misdirection.
I wish this was Lorca, because Lorca would have been like, why the fuck aren't you in the fields?
Yeah, he would have...
I mean, God, like,
damn.
That was, yeah. Warren,
we're talking about Jacob. He's my favorite character this season so far.
Yeah, like he walks in. That's his first question, and Pike diplomatizes his way out of it. But you know, I guess I've gotten ahead of it. They've already ascertained that they cobbled together religions, because nothing says Christianity or Islam or Buddhism or Shinto or Hinduism like, you know what, let's compromise on who our gods are. You know,
well, yeah.
Yeah, nothing defines those religions like that kind of willingness to compromise over that kind of stuff, right? So,
do you like, you know, how, I mean, look, I don't understand how they've only been there for 200 years.
Here's right? what
and
I
we've already created our own new religion around worshiping these angels. Like, these were people plucked out of 2053. They were 10 years away from inventing a warp drive anyway. Like, yeah.
I want to talk about that. All right, the three of us, we've got a librarian and two engineers. Let's say that you beam us away to a random-ass planet. But we still have tools. We still have some things that we need, apparently. Do you not think the three of us could be a little more advanced than, like, 17th century America?
Like, yes, I do. Like,
because all these people still had knowledge of all those things. I feel like we could cobble together a boiler, a steam engine, and at least have electricity or something. Like, mm-hmm. I guess it would be difficult to have the materials, but we could still figure out something. This trope always bothers the shit out of me when people get displaced. It's like they lose all their knowledge of how to make anything.
I mean, the professor built a goddamn radio out of a coconut. But these people, there's no phone, no lights, no motor cars.
Yeah.
Not a single luxury. Oh, hey, Robinson fucking Crusoe.
It's as primitive as can be.
Oh, yeah. God. I wonder how many people would even get that joke.
So,
yeah. But not only that, you've got a bunch of the shit that you brought with you. Like,
It drives me nuts. You know, you could argue that after maybe a couple of generations, it would die out. But it's only been 200 years. Like, theoretically, you know, you've only had, what, let's say 4 to 5 generations? You've still got grandfathers supposedly talking about these things.
Well, I mean, Jacob himself looks like he's about 65. So, like, his dad was probably around. You know, his dad was probably a kid, or at least his granddad, but he can't. But
yeah.
Whatever.
That's what I'm talking about. It makes no sense. Makes no sense.
Look, science is not Discovery's thing. We know this.
You know, and I guess that, I guess Pike had a 25% chance. You know, who are you? We're from the North. You know.
Oh, well, that's good, because we hate the fuckers from the South, West, and East.
Yeah, thank God you're not from the West.
And why are we meant to believe that they even know that there are other humans on the planet?
And well, that's why I think that they said there were 11,000 scattered around the planet. And at one point they do talk about, well, but they didn't know this, you're right, about they used to make pilgrimages to the little white church.
Well,
but not
right.
since the lights go off. Not since the lights went off.
Well, I mean, why don't they talk to them with, like, radio and stuff? Because
the power cells
went
dry.
The only place that had radio communicate? Well, not the one. I mean, they still had the loop and transmission.
Yeah. You know, the only thing this episode was missing when the lights came on was, like, the scene from Die Hard where they start playing Ode to Joy. And when Hans Gruber's, like, hair is blowing back. I really wish they really missed an opportunity on that one. But so,
Theo, you asked for miracles. I give you the Federation of Planets.
So, all right.
I'll be honest with you. I'm going to be honest with you, Willie. I never thought that you would connect this episode to Die Hard. So, bravo.
Well, thank you. Done.
Well done, Willie.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm out. I'm out for the night. You two take it away.
Do you know how long these religions have been around? And do you know how much they have not merged into one yet?
Yeah. You realize that we're only talking 33 years. So this apparently happens in our lifetime. There are enough humans rescued from World War III in 2053. And yeah, they just huddle up together and say, let's rock and roll.
Yeah. So.
Well, I think they're making the argument that the whole transformative experience of nearly dying and being saved encourages them to create this new religion that is a patchwork. But
yeah.
Okay.
It was a dumb idea because that you could make the same argument for that having happened throughout the entirety of human history. I think that's Joe Bob's point, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if in 5,000 years it hasn't happened, you know, what's special about the next 33? So what I love, there's just little things about this show that I love. So they're looking around and, they go look at, like, I don't know, a 13-year-old scrapbook Bible now, and they start flipping through it. But Burnham's like, I'll scan the text. And, like, I was expecting her to, like, go over and, like, speed read it. You
know? No, I know.
She literally scans it.
You knew that. You know? It could be the historical record.
Yeah. Let me scan the text. I mean, what is that thing going to do? Flip a few pages. You know, and she just literally scans it. And then Brother Pike, turns around. And he's like, well, you know, look at this, the stained glass window here. This tells the story of the bombs and the angel and the little white church. And that's when Jacob walks in, right? Why aren't you in the fields? We're from the north. We don't have fields. We're a more industrialized society.
It would have been better if it had been like Fallout 3, where you had the Church of the Atom, and they were worshiping a nuclear bomb instead. But anyway, but right. So Jacob's like, why aren't you out in the fields? Maybe Jacob is. You know what? It's brilliant because there's 11,000 humans. And Jacob, what do we know about Jacob? He changed his name to Israel. And I had 12 sons that became the 12 tribes of Israel. And there's one lost tribe. So there's 1,000 of each of them. We're going to run across the lost tribe of Israel before too much longer. And he was, you know, his heaven was technology.
Maybe so old
his
Earth.
Communicator was the ladder. And heaven was up there atop Jacob's ladder.
I think you're on to it. I think you're on to it. I think old Earth was the lost tribe. And now it has been found. They've brought it whole. They told him that old Earth was never lost, that it survived.
This is so dumb.
Sorry. All right. But let's move on. So I'm trying to remember how we got to the point from Jacob saying, why aren't you in the fields? We need to go see the All Mother.
Right.
And listen. That's the thing.
We got there and we're like, you know what? Fuck it. Earth wasn't working. We were in World War III. So all these soldiers and civilians that are holed up in there, the soldiers are like, let's just have a matriarchal society. Let's just elect an all-mother.
Yeah.
Why not?
So.
And we give thanks for deliverance from 2053. And, you know, it was almost like she was, like the all-mother had this amazing power of expository dump.
Yeah, that was. But I love how Pike, you know, like when the All-Mother's giving her story and Pike jumps in, he's like, so you just combined all the religions into one. I wish the All-Mother had been like, thank you, Pike. That was the point. Like, so.
Neglecting the fact that the town's spiritual leader would be like, no, we discovered the one true religion, dickhead. None of this makes any goddamn sense. But it's charming. That's the difference between season one and season two. None of it makes any goddamn sense even now, but at least it's sort of charming. I mean, do y'all disagree?
It was... okay, I guess I get your point.
I think y'all disagree.
It doesn't make any sense, but no, at least it didn't make any sense with, like, I don't know, the Tartar Dog was pretty charming. Gormagander on a stick at the county fair was kind of charming.
Look, but I am giving leeway on the world building for the individual away missions. Because I said, you know, I would like to see some episodes that sort of stand alone. And let's face it, if you pull apart the lore behind every setup for an away mission in any other Star Trek episode, that's going to unravel pretty quickly. I mean,
in my opinion, by far the worst instance of a Star Trek crew interacting with early pre-warp humans. I can't remember the name of the episode, but I bring your attention to the episode with all of the Irish people.
I'm not sure which one that one was, but
that was so much cringe.
It did remind me. It reminded me a lot of the one where Picard and Riker and Troy went down, and they. You know, but they made them up to look like the locals, which I guess these were humans, so they didn't have to do that. But, you know, Picard gets shot with the arrow, or the guy shoots him with the arrow because he's like, no, the gods will save him. You know what I'm talking about?
Is that the thing with the Mintakans?
Yeah, well, was that incoming message from Mintaka 3?
I think so.
Okay. it's for some... Help me out here, Joe Bob. Was there a local TV station?
I'm thinking about the goddamn commercial.
Okay. I always remember there was a commercial where it was like incoming message from Mintaka 3. I'm pretty sure it was like a local TV station where we grew up, wasn't it?
It was, and then you heard the phone ringing at Data's chest, and Barney Fife answered it, and then it cut to Barney on the old phone, and it was because on, you know, whatever, WBRC at 9, 10 p.m. was TNG followed by Andy Griffith.
Thank you.
That's all I can think about now, and you've completely just derailed this episode. God damn it.
Oh, my God. All right, so...
The one I was referring to is Up the Long Ladder. It was a season 2 episode.
You know what? God bless you, Warden.
Thanks for keeping us on track here.
Oh, God bless.
All right, so...
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Don't apologize.
So after we leave the All-Mother, we sneak back into the church, right? And that's when we're downstairs, we're in the basement, we're kind of looking at everything, we found the device... And Jacob pops in on us again. And for some reason, the sensible thing to do would be throw a concussion grenade in that room of all that tech and everything. I guess he'd thrown one before and kind of knew what it did. So he knocks everybody out, right? And
I mean,
Burnham has her dream.
They've been
again.
Saving that one concussion grenade for like 200 years.
Yeah. So
they don't make them like they used to.
They don't make them at all. They don't make anything at all. That's the problem. It's the problem with these people. But, all right. I feel like we missed a critical part of all this because at the beginning of the episode, you talked about how much you loved Ensign Tilly. And by the way, did you know that Ensign Tilly is in the command training program?
It has not been mentioned since the finale for season 1. Is that still a thing?
Apparently it is still a thing. And I do believe it was mentioned in episode 1 when she was fingering Pike. But
wait, that's right. It was mentioned like 7 times in that episode and another half dozen here. I thought that they had a command training program that was called Starfleet fucking Academy. Is that not what that is?
No, this is like OCS. It's different, apparently.
OCS lets you skip the academy.
Starfleet Academy is where the lackeys go. Command training program is where the kings go.
I thought the lackeys enlist. Oh, I see what you did there. But yeah. Wait a minute. Context.
Dot, dot, dot.
Gives perspective. Yeah. According to Pike, we got new philosophies. It's new season, new philosophies.
Yes, lots of philosophies, in fact. I don't know. I'm kind of starting to not like Pike after this episode a little bit, but we can get to that later. He's no Lorca. He's not Lorcable.
Well, right. I mean, talk about a big cock ring to feel. Did we make that joke last week?
I'm sorry if we
recycled it.
Not precisely, but
I think we revisited the cock ring at some level.
I have a feeling it's going to come up a lot.
Oh, boy. All right. So Tilly goes in here, and she's going to mess with this. I'm a little fuzzy on the science here. Joe Bob, you might have to help me.
Yeah.
If you have a gravity simulator, which is holding an asteroid in place that apparently has a disproportionate weight relative to its size on what normal gravimetric measurements do, and you walk near that, are you just going to be able to stroll about?
Yes, because the gravity simulator is an invisible field around it that
binds it.
It makes no goddamn sense. It is. We should just say the Midasilium are holding it up at this point. Look,
it's terrible. So she goes it.
She look. They don't know what gravity means. They don't know what artificial gravity. Like, they think that gravity just means that it doesn't weigh what it weighed anymore. That it changed the mass or something. Because here's the thing.
Discovery's ass ought to be dragging. Big ass asteroid.
If that big ass chunk of rock really weighed 1.5 tons per cc, there's no fucking way that Discovery could move without tearing itself in half. Because I wondered about that, so I kind of did the math, and just conservatively estimating the size of that thing is about 40 feet in diameter, in diameter, and maybe 20 feet high. That's 1.35 billion tons, which is 18,000 Nimitz class aircraft carriers.
I love having friends like you guys. Yeah. That's awesome.
I mean, it didn't make any sense. And then that one little nugget floated over.
Okay. The Enterprise D is listed at 4.5 million tons.
And this is a dinky little
it's so stupid.
So that little ball, that little piece that floated over there would not have just crushed the table. It would have crushed the table, gone through the whole fucking ship, sped down towards the planet, and created its own extinction level event.
Right, because I'm
curious as to whether that asteroid could even exist at that density. I mean,
I think it can. I mean, I think that
it's like a black hole. I mean, it's like a
neutron star.
Got a shit ton of mass packed into a tiny area.
Well, so, when you get a gravity so large, when something becomes so dense that it generates enough gravity to overpower internal atomic forces, and I literally mean the forces that keep the electrons out in the electron cloud as opposed mm-hmm. to inside the nucleus, mm-hmm. then the electrons will collapse down onto the nucleus, fuse with any protons in the nucleus, and you get nothing but nuclei made of neutrons all packed together without the empty space of the electron cloud. And it's,
right.
That's what a neutron star is.
Yeah.
And it is the most dense thing in the universe, but
mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's quite this dense, because since I had used a Nimitz-class aircraft carrier, I just wanted to say it would only take about 6,500 cc's, which is a little smaller than a basketball, to weigh the size of that aircraft carrier. But, I don't know if it's at some point you reach a density that is so high that you overcome the internal forces between the nuclei of atoms, mm-hmm. and they collapse in on each other, and that's where you get a black hole.
All right.
It's got to be more dense than a neutron star to do that.
I'm going to stop us there, because we can belabor the science of this show for hours if we really needed to. And we still haven't gone past the fact that we're going to sample it, because somehow, because it kind of registered some same readings as the tardigrade ipso facto, this is the way that we are going to create a navigational system to replace Stamets.
How? I don't understand that.
Where did we get to that conclusion? I mean,
is this made awful. Of the same shit as Mud's balls?
It must be. Must be.
Didn't they say it was some sort of matter like that? I don't know. His weren't that heavy, though.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So
well, yeah. Oh, yeah. Those were dark matter, and this is they're bringing up dark matter with this. Yeah.
Yeah. So she gets her. She gets
that
her
a yes or no,
sample.
Warden?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I did not catch whether that was a yes or a no.
Yes, they actually yes.
Okay.
Mud, they referred to it as dark matter, and they're referring to this several times as dark matter.
Right, because we referred to it as don't matter.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like this, the science don't matter.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. So we
by the way, there are people walking around.
Out.
There are people walking around in that shuttle bay. Just not fucking, oh yeah, whatever. She looks like she's supposed to be here, so yeah, sure.
Yeah. Well, she's got goggles on, right? So,
well, at least she's got
PPE. Goggles on, and she has colloquially engaged with the computer, right? Like, I feel like the computer's sitting there trying to describe it to you, and she goes, boom. I feel like the computer, a natural reaction would have been, does not compute. You know, please rephrase your statement.
Look,
I feel like that has been well established in Star Trek, that it does not understand colloquialisms.
Even the computer finds Tilly annoying, because like if it could have done a facepalm, it would have. She was like, boom, and the computer was like, it.
Yeah, it rebooted
Whatever.
Itself.
Sure. Boom.
Yeah.
It reformatted itself.
Yeah.
It was about to tell her, by the way, you're probably going to die, and it was like, you know what, just... Natural
yeah,
consequences.
Whatever. Yeah, Darwin Award. So so she starts to get her core sample. The little nugget flies over and busts the table.
I don't understand. I don't understand at all how the little handheld gravity simulator works, by the way. Because that makes no goddamn sense.
But we got to see Tilly fly. And so, you know, she flew across the room and banged up her head. And
oh man, for a minute I hope she was dead.
Oh god.
You knew you can't kill off such a vibrant, incandescent character.
I was just secretly thinking, please be dead.
Yeah. So anyway, so she's knocked unconscious and comes to in the sick bay. And she's getting a lecture from Saru. And the first thing that she wants to know is, did this compromise my placement in the command training program? I hope she eventually does something that gets her kicked out of it.
I see. Because
I'm tired of listening to it already. But, I mean, but you talked about the soap opera dialogue in the season finale of season one. Like, how about that little pep talk from Saru? Come on. Like, oh, before we can help others, we must first help ourselves. And you are very important, Tilly. And, oh, this was just awful. Like, I feel like an actual captain would have been like, yes, you're out of the command training program. You are clearly not responsible enough to even take your own safety into consideration.
Look, Saru understands the weight placed on her because he feels the same weight. Jesus.
Because he learned 90 languages. 90,
fluently?
So okay.
Fluently?
Yeah.
Really?
So
I call bullshit, Saru.
So Kelpians can run like 70 kilometers an hour. They have superhuman strength. They have the ability to sense impending danger or death. They can clearly communicate 90 different languages fluidly. Like, these things should be ruling the entire universe. They are clearly the most unstoppable beings ever created. And we have never heard about them in any capacity.
How
ever.
Did they not invent the spore drive? Like, they're so damn brilliant. But yeah, yeah, Tilly was like,
this is so
like,
stupid.
This I couldn't so believe stupid. Tilly in the middle of that was like, fluently? And he's like, that's not the point, bitch. Like, yeah. Really? You're going to call me out on that? No, I'm not conversational in them, but I can read 90 different languages. Is that not impressive enough for you, dumbass, who just fucking on her own went and damn near put a hole in the whole ship? I mean, like, she just on a whim, or a hunch, I guess is a better word, put the entire crew at risk. She knew that, she should have done the math on what accidentally dropping a few cc's would do to the ship, but whatever. By the way, the ship would have fallen out of you know what, never mind.
It's not important. We don't need to get ahead of ourselves here, because for some reason apparently back on the bridge, right?
Before we do back on the bridge, we got to remember that she was saved by her dead classmate from... God, this is so stupid.
It's so stupid.
Is that bitch really there?
No.
Is it gonna end up that she's really there? No. I mean, I know that she's a figment of Tilly's imagination, but it's like all the... like, is she going to start creating like shit out of thin air because of her...
I think she's
proximity. Yeah.
Tilly is a Q.
She may be.
And maybe this was the moment that she got it. She got penetrated by all that dark matter. Because once you go dark, you never go back. And from there on out, like, now she can fabricate all these things. She couldn't even remember her name. Like, if you're gonna pull something out of your subconscious, wouldn't it be someone that you remembered a little bit more fondly?
No, that's the way subconscious works. I like the way, though, that Tilly's subconscious also has aging software, because, like, she hadn't seen her since they were 12, but it was, you know, I don't care. I don't care. She was so stupid.
She's one of the few characters who's more annoying to me than Tilly so far, and I don't even know if I should call her a character yet, because... I mean, at this point, all we know is that she's like the angel on Tilly's shoulder.
We have not seen the last of her.
No, I'm sure we have not.
Did you notice he called her Stilly?
Yeah.
Like combining Sylvia and Tilly. That's so endearing.
Yeah, well, but that's what clued her in. She said, oh, I know this girl. I've only been called Stilly one time by a girl I can't remember from sixth grade. But,
okay, so anyway. When I saw that, by the way, I was like, fuck, we're doing one of two things. Either Stilly's going to be like creating apparitions out of thin air because of some interaction she's got between her mycelium powers and dark matter powers. Well, or she's a Q. Or, and this is what I hope they do, I hope Tilly actually has multiple personalities, because in the last episode, or whatever, the last episode of season one, I made the comment, like, I don't think that you just can flip a switch and act like a psychopath. You know, when they were on the planet, mm-hmm. and she was...
Yeah, yeah.
I recall.
Maybe she's just got, like... dissociative identity disorder or something, and we're going to start seeing all these personalities at Tilly's, and I just hope to God one of them turns out to be interesting.
Well, hey, we haven't seen this little girl go run her course yet.
I mean,
she's not off to a good start.
Uh-huh.
But, so, alright, so, again, the science of this show baffles me. So we show up, and there's going to be something. How is the radiation going to spike to a level that is going to be an extinction level event so quickly, but there has been no side effects on the planet so far? Do these people understand how radiation works?
I don't know. It was dumb.
And then furthermore, why does it have to be rocks floating around bringing the radiation? Radiation does not need rocks to pass around through. Anyway, so, all right. But so they decide they probably can't see the outer ring, so they're not going to know what's coming. How are they going to know what's coming anyway?
It's well, what radiation. Are they going to do if it does, if they do?
I mean, it's not like, it's if not they like look Star up Trek in the sky. 2.
And it's glowing red, like, right. Oh, shit, the gods are angry. Like, I don't get it.
It's not like Star Trek 2 where there was a big beam of blue light that Spock knew was the radiation that he was sticking his hands in and trying to fix everything with, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to know. They're not going to be able to see this. But so anyway, but Saru poignantly decides that the reason they have been brought here is to avoid this catastrophe.
And, because there are no catastrophes on Discovery's watch. When he said that, I was like, oh, right. Starting now, you mean. We're just forgetting last season, because that was a fucking catastrophe.
No, I'm pretty sure, like, I don't know, maybe there's a precedent in some of the Star Trek episodes where you can violate General Order 1 if they don't know that you violated General Order 1, right? So, like, they could rescue before, this planet. Yes. As long as they didn't know that they were being rescued.
Yeah, they've done that before.
They find ways to bend it.
So, for some reason, a car's exhaust, maybe, I don't know, maybe this was some social commentary on environmentalism and how our cars are bringing the cataclysmic extinction level events of climate change closer to Earth. You know, Stamets just pops off. He's like, oh, no, you can't take a shuttle, let alone the fact you'll probably get captured by Klingons. But also, the exhaust is going to pull all the radiation closer and make this happen faster.
Look, I was too busy trying to figure out why the asteroid ring hadn't already just, like, swarmed in on Discovery, because it shouldn't be, like, the mass of the asteroid. Droid change.
That's right.
But once again, we don't understand how mass works.
You know,
because as we put it outside the shuttle bay, they all swarm in on it.
Right. We don't have the gravity neutralizer. Like, maybe they should have called it the gravity, neutralizer or something, right? But you don't need to generate more gravity around this massive asteroid that has its own gravitational pull. You need to somehow contain that gravity and keep it from interfering with everything else. But
that's not how gravity works.
I understand that.
I guess what it does is it measures the gravity coming off and then projects an equal reverse gravity field around it, pushing things away in the exact force that the rock is pulling things towards it. which seems like it would take an ass ton of power.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't be able to run the headlights, but I don't know. This is really something
that didn't seem to be connected to the ship at all should not have that much power. I mean, if you look at it,
there's probably not like
it's plugged in or anything. They just threw it on.
That's probably
almost killed everybody. I mean, it's just.
Remember how they couldn't transport it?
Maybe there's an Infinity Stone in the center of that asteroid. Oh, who knows?
Remember how they couldn't transport it, but it still goes with them when they spore jump, and I don't. Well, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway.
For you to have only had three things you didn't like about this episode, you sure find a lot to say.
That's the three things I hated.
In the first episode, we had like 6 hours to solve the word problem. In this episode, we had 64 minutes. So do you think in the next episode they're going to jump in and it's going to be like it's going to be like the Bozeman coming out of the temporal rift. We have like 8 seconds to solve it or else we're doomed. Because I feel like we're still dialing things up to 11 in this show, right? Like this, we're gonna create nuclear winter, extinction level event. By the way, I'm glad to see that we try to be resourceful in Starfleet and cross train. Because why the hell does your helmsman know this much about radiation and how it's going to affect the upper atmosphere and what the cataclysmic events that are going to ensue? You think the cab driver is really going to know that much about it?
Look, Wakanda was down on the surface. She couldn't do the calculations. So was Burnham.
Bot-Bot was in Wakanda's seat.
Well, that's true. And she got her pilot's license by age 12. What the hell was she going to do between then and the time she got old enough to go to the academy? She studied up on nuclear winters.
The nuclear winter of 2053. Maybe that's what she wrote her thesis on.
Why do you call it nuclear winter? Isn't that a term that's really tied to...
It's used in any situation that is similar.
Yeah, we use it for that, but in 300 years, whatever.
Let's not bog this down too much. We haven't even gotten to the donut maneuver yet. This is why we were brought here. We got to figure out a way to save these 11,000 people and our 3 crew people from nuclear winter extinction level event. This is a pretty big planet to only have 11,003 people on it. But
hey, we've already covered that. I think 11,000 is too many, but whatever. So, we can assume it was uninhabited 200 years ago, and these are all people that they brought there or their progeny. I don't know. Fuck it. So, yeah. Anyway, none of this makes any sense, but at this point, we've committed to it, so we're going to do the donut maneuver. Because Tilly's woken up from sick bay, and they're just like, oh, I got a plan. And Demeter, you get to do donuts in a starship. And Demeter's like, fuck yes. Oh, we're going to do that. But we can't get it inside. We can't get inside the ring. And Stamets is on the bridge right now for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know where any of these people work normally because they're just wherever they need to be.
Why can we not get inside the ring? Have we forgotten about the Z axis again? I'm assuming this ring, you know, is if it's like any other planetary ring that you've seen, it's fairly two dimensional. Why couldn't we just kind of drop below it and then come up through it? I don't understand it. None of it makes any sense.
But we've
gotten too far because we kind of jumped around a little bit early.
I thought we couldn't go into it because of the warp trail making it worse.
Maybe so. All right, fine. I'll give it.
Like I said, this is where Tokyo Reese decides
wants to blow it up,
shoot it all, and
but we've got we jumped around and we talked about because earlier we talked about Jacob throwing the concussion grenade, knocking everybody out, Wakanda breaking out of the basement and all that. How did you feel about Pike's stance on the fact that they were humans and they didn't know that the Earth wasn't destroyed? They were technically like a new species and they were forbidden from intervening. How did you feel about all that?
I felt like it was a really, really
strict interpretation
of the First Order.
Yeah.
For a show that's been like, fuck it, for the most part.
Well, and, but they were like, fuck it at the end anyway.
Yeah, I know. But they've been like, fuck it the whole time. I mean, you know. I thought that it was basically there. It was a writing convenience, whatever. I also, like,
it would have been perfectly fine to have just said, yeah, you're actually right. We are from old Earth. You guys are going to die in 64 minutes.
I would think that you could talk to them about things that they are aware of, like the Earth. And again, I mean, these people are...
I mean, how are you going to explain the power cell at the end anyway?
Prior to... Well, that's when he's already said, fuck it. They're 10 years...
That's my point. How are you going to explain it? Oh, yeah, those guys weren't from New Earth. But, hey, the power cell just started working again. Roll Tide.
Well, I mean, fuck it. It's Jacob's problem at this point. That's what he's thinking. I don't... Look...
Jacob probably got burned at the stake as a heretic.
That's what
5 minutes after I honestly thought.
I honestly thought that when he's like, "I'm sure we'll see each other again." That old whatever Mama Matron is going to come back and be like, "You heretic! You have just they're all
defiled our
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I don't know. I kind of looked at it like. The way that when we find like this tribe in the Amazons and we try not to, fuck around with them too much, it was kind of that situation.
Maybe.
Even though it doesn't really work.
I get that though, but the tribe from the Amazon never knew about any of this other stuff to start with. That is not the case here. These people lived on Earth in 2053. They knew about Earth. They knew about all the technology. And then all of a sudden, they knew that they weren't there anymore.
Do you like the part where Jacob's like, do you fly through the stars? And he, like, flaps his wings like he's picturing a fucking bird. I'm like, dude, you lived in a time where there's, like, space fighters. I mean, there's still space-capable vehicles.
It was so stupid.
Look, I'm not denying it was dumb.
Oh, man.
It looked
like a Chappelle Show skit in that moment right there.
I'm surprised Pike didn't come in and say, like, we have flown across the stars. We have sailed in our great caravel in the sky. He's like, oh, yeah, on your warp drive. No, I know what you mean, fucker. But thanks for being condescending, you jackass.
Oh, boy.
Look, when it comes down to it, and I think this is the reason why I'm willing to give this episode a pass on a lot more shit than I've been willing to everything else. When it comes right down to it, the reason that I am willing to cut this episode slack, where I have not been willing to do it on other episodes, the reason that I can stomach a lot more of the stupidity, is this is the first episode that actually made me feel a human emotion other than anger, disbelief, and just, frustration. Like, Jacob is maybe the best character so far in the show because, like, I felt something for him at the end, you know, where he is excited about having, you know, his whatever religion confirmed, whatever you want to call it. Like, I felt more of a connection, just a human connection with this episode than any episode up to this point. And so I'm willing to really widen that window of grace that I'm going to give him. Now, everything that happened on the starship was stupid.
Oh, man. Boy, was it.
And most of what happened on the planet was also stupid. But I don't know. Like I said, I actually felt something in this episode. So
I buy that. I agree with that. But I've already made it clear I see more merit this season. So
yeah. So was it in Picard when they were talking about dissecting all the Borgs, when they were like, when they kept calling it tech, like a shorthand, like, what kind of tech you got for me? Was that in Picard? Because I feel like that is recently something has come out where tech becomes like a shorthand, even though it never really was. I don't feel like it ever was before. With, you know, like when Burnham was like, they stole all our tech. I don't feel like that was ever a shorthand term that was thrown around like that in Star Trek before.
No, it was not. But they're going for a less formal vibe with in recent shows. So
I'm sure it's from some MMO.
Maybe that was it. Maybe
they don't want to call it loot.
Yeah, it took all our loot. So, but we get some more social commentary about make sure to lock up your guns from your children because you never know what they're going to do. Because she somehow figures out how to set the phaser into self-destruct mode. And Pike jumps on top of it, and it cracks some ribs. And even though the compound fracture in Burnham's femur, that would arguably have been one of the most painful things that a human being could ever endure, was healed up in just a couple hours of her just sitting there playing on her iPad in the last episode. You
think ribs would be like really easy?
Yeah, but apparently he's all still wrapped up and sore and looked like a Klingon xylophone. I don't know. That just, again, the tech. Listen to me. I'm fucking doing it now. The tech only works when they need it to work.
Doesn't she say Klingon xylophone in a marching band? Did I miss that? Yeah.
She did.
How do you march with a fucking xylophone? I guess Klingons could do it. But
they do it.
In the xylophone's not marching though. Isn't it usually on the sideline?
There are versions that, you know, you wear a strap that goes.
Okay. It's, I was not in the marching band, so
I was not either. But I had lots of bandy friends, so
that surprises me.
Well, anyway, so
joking. Anyway,
so Pike jumps over the.
Can you guys imagine a Klingon marching band?
I bet they had one in Orion Town. So Pike jumps over it, and it blows up under his chest, and this is when it reminded me a lot of Mintaka 3. Because they're like, no, see, we have to pray for deliverance. The gods will save him. And so sure enough, we run into the church and we beam him up and we get the deliverance, right? Beam of light. He beams up. And then we start the donut maneuver, which
instead of being like, oh, holy shit, Jacob was right. It's technology. Stupid ass matron is like, glory be, it's a miracle. Man up and vanished like a fart in the wind.
Yeah, Shawshank Redemption in the list. And so
that's another good movie. That's better than this episode.
It's better than Star Trek Discovery. So so they do that, they do the donut maneuver. They do the donut maneuver. And the little asteroid comes out and like. So I guess we're to assume they released the gravity generator. The thing flew out of the back of the shuttle bay.
Don't you think
it would have pulled the asteroids crashing into it?
The asteroids on the other end, on the other side of the planet, are gonna fuck up anything in the eastern hemisphere. Because like, I don't think that the rocks in the planet's rings would have just like moved around the planet. And yeah, that's a good point. Once it got outside, I mean, even if you could see the point of the stupid ass gravity generator inside Disco, as soon as they let it go and it wasn't under the effect of that anymore, it would, you know, pull Discovery right back into it. But I figured you'd be okay with it, Willie, because we brought out your favorite
tractor beam.
Yeah, it's Ex Machina.
Because of the damn tractor beam. Yeah, and that's what was my next comment was going to be, but it's okay because we tractor beamed it.
Do you know how strong
again, like
that
could
tractor
you imagine
beam
the inertia when
be?
You made? Well, what about when you made a turn? Like that thing would have just continued careening off for light years before you were able to stop the inertia on that thing.
Well, there's no way you're going to be able to stop.
Ball. Yeah.
There's no way you're going to be able to stop the inertia on that thing. So I don't know.
Maybe this was the rogue comet that killed Phoenix's parents.
I don't know what calculation that they did, but something tells me they didn't really look at what was in the thing's path. So this could be a bad day for a planet down the line.
It'll be an extinction-like
event. Solved. Sir, it's not
this
a direct
is like the
collision
snake
course
in the
for
mongoose.
A class M planet with 7 billion life forms. Like, that's next week's episode.
It's so stupid.
The thing, though, it would pass straight through the planet. I mean,
well, but it would also kill everyone on the planet.
Yeah, this thing is what hits Praxis in like 30 years. This is where it's final resting place.
Incident on Praxis.
Oh man. Jesus. But so Tilly goes in there, and as if Tilly wasn't annoying enough, Saru says, you know, Demeter, are you ready? I've had my pilot's license since I was 12 years old. I wish Saru had been like, that's fantastic. You're actually flying a starship. Answer me. Are you ready? You know.
How do you get a pilot's license at 12? Whatever.
Precocious. Yeah.
I don't even care.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Luke Skywalker was flying a T-16 before he was 16. Wasn't he only supposed to be like 15 in episode 4?
I'm pretty sure he was a.
But he's been flying it for a while since he was like 10.
Yeah, because he used to bullseye womp rats.
Yeah, because he crashed it at one point. It's in a. You know what?
Yeah.
Let's not bring in. Well, no.
Let's not mix
I don't
up
go
easier.
There.
Yeah. So, but as soon as Tilly's little friend up was was on the bridge with her, and Saru's like, maybe you should disobey my orders more often. Who says that?
Well, to be fair, like, this is Starfleet. That should be lesson one in a command trainee program. Orders, we don't follow.
Don't matter.
We're about to talk Pike into saying, fuck it on the first
that's
order.
That's right. So, but before the turbo lift closes, Tilly sees her buddy again, and she goes up and looks it up, and sure enough, she's been dead, or she's dead. And the big reveal of this show is, oh my gosh, this character who nobody else notices. It's like the Sixth Sense. You know, it's like nobody else interacts with this person, nobody else knows they're there, and it takes Tilly the whole episode to figure out that, oh my god.
Except the Sixth Sense. Spoilers. from 1999.
We are well past the statute of limitations.
No, I'm kidding. I know. Yeah, but Sixth Sense was well done. Like you know, you could miss
very
that
well
twist.
Done. And when you went back same and watched it again, Fight Club, you saw it. Right.
Yeah, this one was not.
This was less well done.
Oh,
less well done.
Dead. But in the Mycelium Network, no one's ever truly gone. So maybe she was that green thing that landed on Tilly's shoulder out of the mycelium and
it soaked into
didn't
it.
Didn't that happen at some point?
It did.
Was that mycelium or was that?
It was at the end of the serpent bird scene. one of them kind of flew around and landed on her shoulder.
Oh my god.
I mean, I gotta give it to it. The show's definitely more grounded in reality than it was for the entirety of season one.
Oh, Jesus. Jesus. Oh, boy. Okay.
So, this General Order 1, it's pretty negotiable, isn't it?
It's not intended to be, but it finding ways to work around it is always.
But we're not even working around it at this point. Like, we just blatantly disregarded it and said, you know what? I'd really like Manhattan Island. I'm going to trade Jacob some beads for it, and I'm going to take it. Because
did you like how he's like, I'm glad you followed it while I was out. Burnham's like, well, I remember what happened the last time I didn't follow Captain Swords. I'm like, you mutinied again last episode or the one before it. Like, what the fuck are you talking about, Burnham?
Like 14 days ago.
And also, that long. So Burnham tells him, doesn't she tell him something like, well, you know, you got the First Order, but then you've also got this helmet cam that we need. So what's more important? Doesn't she say something like that?
She does, yeah.
Refresh my memory, because wasn't there an episode where we were like on a mission to save the entire Federation to a Pavan planet, and we decided to just fucking stop that mission when we felt like we had a First Order situation?
Yeah, it's
didn't that happen? But that wasn't important enough that like one of the two's got to go. Maybe. No, in that situation, we're like, all right, we're following the First Order.
Maybe these go the other way. You know, we've always assumed that General Order 1 was like the ultimate order, but you know, if you remember, General Order 4 in the Terran Empire was to exterminate all other races with extreme prejudice. Maybe the scales flipped. Maybe one is kind of like we kind of want to follow that one, but not really. And then the higher you go is the less negotiable it becomes. Maybe that's why it was General Order 4. Because you think, like you made the comment, you think exterminate all other races with extreme prejudice. What made 1, 2, and 3 if that was number 4? But because I definitely feel like the prompt in the pilot, we kind of skirted around the prime directive, right?
That's putting it generously. I would say we just said fuck it.
Yeah. And so in this one, we have obviously, but yeah, we're just kind of like, you know what? I really want that camera, so I'm just going to break this thing.
But they were generally more cavalier about General Order 1 / the Prime Directive in this era of Star Trek. They did the same. They were very cavalier about it in original series as well. It wasn't really until Next Generation that they started at least paying lip service to being more rigid about applying it. But even then, they're like, maybe there's a higher morality here or something like that. But then at least it was being used as like thought provoking and that kind of thing. It wasn't just a matter of, you know, just randomly saying, like you guys are saying, fuck it. They were like, you know, having actual conversations and like agonizing over it.
I don't know. I'm just starting to think Pike just really doesn't care about rules and regulations either. So obviously we had the whole General Order 1 stuff. Pike let Burnham and Sarek believe, I guess, for days that Spock just didn't want to see him and didn't bother to tell him that he was in a mental hospital because Spock, but it was because Spock asked him not to tell. But then he's like, ah, you know what? They probably need to know. I'm going to tell them anyway. It's no, he has no line. He just kind of crosses it and just decides to do whatever he wants to do whenever it suits him. And that's why I said I'm starting not to like Pike, because his motives are very unpredictable to me and don't make a whole lot of sense. Like if what. I don't know. That's my whole point. I'm starting to not like Pike a little bit, just for that reason, that it seems like he's going to do whatever, and he's not doing it in a cool way like Lorca was doing. It just seems more like an unplanned and befuddling way. Like, I wouldn't worry about seeing Spock. Like, that would have been fine if it hadn't been revealed for several episodes down the line that Spock was actually in the psychiatric, you know, Starbase 5. Like, it would have been like he was actually honoring what Spock had said. But we just, we start rattling this stuff off pretty quickly. And, you know what, yeah, go rummage about his quarters. No big deal. You know what, after you get it, come back and show me whatever you found in his diary, because I really want to see it. So, I don't know. Like I said, I'm starting to not like Pike a little bit. Maybe I'm just being too hard on him, but that's kind of where I'm at.
I'm slightly above neutral on him. Like, I don't love him. He's not lorkable, but he's all right. You know, I like him more than I dislike him at this point.
So you're bubbling in like a 6, I guess?
Yeah.
Okay. That's fair. I mean, it is early, right? We still need to get to know him a little bit, but
he hadn't completely pissed me off yet. And I find him humorous in the context that he is the vessel of that the writers used to apologize to us for how stupid season 1 was.
Yeah, I mean, they are using him for that, and there are moments where he's funny, you know, he gets a little comedic puppy bit.
Yeah,
but so all right, so but he beams back down in uniform, and tells Jacob everything, and Jacob's just like, you know what, good enough, NBD. Like, I'd be a little pissed if I'd been living in like a Mennonite community. And then all of a sudden you find out they're flying around in starships and they're just going to leave you there. I'd be a little bitter about that. But
well, he didn't even ask to go up. Apparently that was enough for him.
Well, no, Pike told him he couldn't intervene. I can't intervene. I'm going to tell you everything, but I can't actually intervene. So, but I guess I'm confused how we rigged up the distress beacon to keep going anyway, but we couldn't get anything else to work. And as it's panning through the little basement there, you see like the old sodium light bulbs down in there. I mean, like some of the stuff didn't line up at all, you know. But
maybe that church was also a museum.
Yeah, maybe. I guess maybe it could have come with the church. But why? I don't know.
Well, that church is not exactly an urban location in either place that it's been, either on Earth or on Terra Elysium. So one presumes that.
Can we talk about the names? Terra Elysium, New Eden. I mean, I feel like at some point we're just trying too hard to try and hammer home the point. And maybe that's what they were doing. Yeah, they were just trying to set up how fanatical some of these people are.
After all of the very, for most people, I'm guessing, rather obscure mythological references from season one. I think they may have decided that maybe let's not make it quite so hard for people.
maybe so.
Plus,
that's kind of what I think too.
Plus, I mean, and I imagine as you're seeing, we're leaning pretty heavy into the religious imagery in this season.
So.
That's true. Hold on, hold the phone. I didn't pick up on that.
Well, we don't have time. In this podcast for me to explain that.
Yeah, I mean, the Greek mythology thing, underworld, overworld, all that was very clear in the last season. I must have totally missed all the religion stuff brewing about right here. But it's okay, because we've now had two angel sightings, right? Burnham has seen the angel twice, actually, I guess. And Pike has now seen the angel, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, who
will be next?
I know. So is that what's going to happen? We're going to keep seeing. You think maybe Stamets, maybe that's what Stamets saw in the network. He saw the angel. Now he's all confused. Maybe annoying Tilly's brain scan girl is also an angel. Maybe she's like some kind of little guardian angel.
Oh my God.
Maybe they're all around.
Oh my God. What if Tilly, and she's not becoming a Q, she's becoming this angel?
I hate.
Like,
that would be terrible.
That's why it's always like red. It's like her red hair behind it. And like, she's going to become the savior of all these people. And traveling through time and shit on the mycelial. Oh my God.
The finale of season two is her, it's like
Tilly ascends,
like the Virgin Mary pose. Yeah.
Well, we know she's not a virgin, but
well, she might be in this universe. Oh no! She was talking about how much she dug soldiers. Yeah.
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 Well, maybe they get around it with the. Maybe it's like you said. Maybe she's just done hand stuff, so she's like, "I'm still a virgin, Tilly." Oh my God! What? No. Because, like, I just worry that they're gonna try to tie. You remember how in season one they tried to tie everything together with the dumbest shit possible? I hope they don't try to tie Tilly in. This is this whole angel mystery.
I swear.
See, but I'm surprised, because I figured you guys would already be. I'm shutting up.
maybe we're trying not to overthink it, Warden. So all right, Joe Bob, did we finish up the episode, right? So where do we go from here? Obviously, we're going to go to the, I'm trying to remember. I need to look up what all the dungeons were in A Link to the Past in the Dark World, so I know.
Well, while you do that,
I'm pretty sure it was three, the Water Temple. We headed to
a little hazy because some of them you can do a little out of order.
Only like five and six.
No, I thought it was three, not the desert.
Well, are we talking Light World or Dark World?
Talking Dark World, because there were seven.
There were seven in the Dark World. It started off the one in the east. Which was like the first one you did in the overworld. You had to get, because you had Kiki the monkey and Kiki loved money.
Yeah.
And then, right, you went straight south there to like the marshy area, right, for the next one?
Yes.
And then didn't you go over to the desert?
I believe.
I don't remember, but I'm going to look it up. Because, I'm actually impressed that you're remembering these as well as you.
I remember the fourth ones in the village. You fight the thief.
Which one's the one up? And there's one in the forest where the that was an annoying one.
Oh God,
I remember.
Oh God, yes.
And I think the water one, wasn't that the ice one, like the one down in the lake? That was
right? You had to go to the middle of Lake Hyrule.
Yeah, I think that was like 6th or something, because that was like right before Turtle Rock, right?
Right.
Yeah, because if
it was 5 or 6.
It was like, because if you went to Turtle Rock first and got the fire rod, it made it a whole lot easier to beat that one.
Yeah.
Let's see, the Dark World. Level 1 was the Palace of Darkness. Level 2 was the Swamp Palace. Mm-hmm. Level 3 was Skull Woods. 4 okay, was Thieves Town.
Yes.
And 5 was the Ice Palace. Desert,
right? Okay, so 3 was the forest, 4 was the desert.
4 was Thieves Town, which is...
That was in the middle of...
Dark Kakario Village.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
1 was actually the desert, Palace of Darkness, I believe. 6 was Mystery Mire. 7 was Turtle Rock. And then Ganon's Tower.
Okay. I thought the Palace of Darkness was...
The Palace of Darkness is the palace in the east.
Yeah.
Yeah. You fight the giant, what you call it, thing with the hammer.
Oh, was the desert one, was it a swamp?
Yeah.
In
it's Misery Mire. Yeah. It was.
Because you had to drain it somehow, right? Or something? Didn't you have to drain,
yeah.
drain
it? To yeah. Reveal yeah. It? Yeah.
This is my fault. This is my fault. We're way off base.
But that
was
fun.
We're heading to the third dungeon. We've already solved the first two,
mm-hmm.
And so we're heading to the third dungeon. So, Joe Bob, what do you think we're going with this?
Do you want the episode title?
Do
sure.
I?
Sure.
Yeah. So episode 3 is called Point of Light.
They're K-Lish. Much less descriptive.
Oh my God! Are we going to go back and pick up?
Are we going to pick up? I was just thinking. Are we going to?
We're going to pick up Phoenix, aren't we? That's going to be episode 3, Point of Light, because the Beacon of K-Lish, and we're going to. Oh man, we're going to do this, aren't we?
And High Chancellor Lacrell.
Either that or yep. HW, one or the other. I mean,
or what?
I said either him or HW, one or the other.
HW Bush?
Yes, I was making a Points of Light reference. Sorry.
So
was that too obscure for you guys? I thought you.
I think it was.
Yeah,
it must have been.
1,000 Points of Light. Anyway.
Okay.
So Point of Light. So I don't know at what point we're going to go back and get him. But we're going to go back and get him because we left that too open-ended. And
we'll get him on loan from Chancellor Lacrell because yeah. There'll be something he can help us with.
And I just can't imagine we're not going to have to hear about the Beacon of Kalish. And talking about the Point of Light. But here's the deal. Here's
fuck
the deal.
It. We only got. Hey, fuck it. Let's bring JoJo in too.
Yeah.
The Emperor.
Well, she's still in Orion Town, right?
I don't know.
She's still in Orion Town, slaying her way through sex slaves.
Look, the last time you said somebody was still off slaying their way through people.
Boy, was I wrong.
Yeah.
Boy, was I wrong. I'm still just beside myself and how little I understand about how species reassignment surgery actually works. Because I know they tried to explain it. It still doesn't make any sense at all to me.
No.
How would they shave down his fingertips? Why did they... None of it makes any sense.
I wonder what Pike's going to say when he hears about all that shit. What's he going to look at the camera and say about that?
So who do you think's going to be the angel?
Tilly.
I was John DeLancey. It's either got to be John DeLancey or Tilly. It doesn't have to be, but I would love for it to be one of those two. But
I am. What do you think, Joe Bob?
God, it's I don't know what they're doing with Tilly. It would piss me off if Tilly was like somehow becoming. I don't know. I was positive that like they were gonna do some sort of angel thing with Lorca and Burnham and the stupid ass, you know, from the first time they met and they're like, I'm Gabriel, I'm Michael. They're like, we should team up, be angels together.
But here, okay,
you know,
but
it would be something that they fucking do to make like to somehow make it Michael. Like Michael's mom or something, like because well, she's all like sciencey and like, oh,
this is
I
what
don't,
you gotta
religion
do.
Is bullshit. But then she's gonna have her own fucking religious experience or some stupid shit like that.
Well, but see, you gotta think of it. You gotta think of all this in context, right? So you gotta piece together the clues we know. Spock was drawing this stuff, you know, from when he was a kid and having nightmares, right? And allegedly, it may have been before he ever even met Burnham, right?
Supposedly.
So, it's not totally ludicrous that whoever this angel is visited Spock before he ever even met Burnham, right?
And I can't he's been we're having bringing like an SNL skit from the O.J. Simpson trial into this, but whatever.
Yeah. And so you got to go back even further. You got to think about who could possibly have been involved with Spock before he ever even met Burnham.
Are you suggesting that Sarek is Red Angel?
No, I think it's all going to come back to Alice in Wonderland because Amanda used to read it to both of them. Right? Long time ago. I think we're gonna pull this book back into it again, aren't we?
Yeah, except I mean Amanda's there's established history with Amanda. When is Cybok born, by the way? Has his mama already died?
I will look that up.
In childbirth. I
forgot about Cybok.
Everybody
he was Sarek was a bit of a lady killer, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, he went through that beard phase and they just couldn't resist him.
That's right.
That's this just is, this one. Yeah. Here we go.
I don't know. I guess this angel's got to be a cue. I mean, how else is it transcending space time? Something stupid like that. And then I guess we're going to get to the end of it. I guess I don't understand the connection between Spock and all these pictures. Are we going to like, is the seventh dungeon going to be Spock's dungeon and we're going to have to try and get him out?
Aren't we going to Spock next? Aren't we heading to the Federation nut house?
I don't remember. Oh, is that where we're going? I thought
that's what we said. We were taking an olive branch to him. Did we not say that?
We probably did. I usually drift off. I do miss some of the end of the episode because it's really annoying in this season on CBS. It's like next on Star Trek Discovery, and then it starts to show clips, and I always have to try and ninja pause it. And so it's possible that I miss a little bit there at the end.
Doesn't do that for me. I'm watching on Amazon Prime.
CBS is like spoiling the shit out of things. So
yeah, CBS knows it's a bad show, so they're trying to give you some spoilers to keep you hooked. But we gonna see Mud again?
No.
You don't think so?
Maybe.
You don't think we're gonna go to the planet and have a bunch of Muddites running around?
A Muddite society? The Muddite Luddites, maybe.
Yeah, I would love it. Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know where they're taking this. Obviously, we're doubling down on the whole religion thing and the angels. And now Burnham's had a sighting. Pike's had a sighting. It's possible that Tilly and Stamets have had sightings. And we're going to find out that this angel's going to be like Gary Sinise from Mission to Mars, and he's just kind of been floating around time, space, saving people his whole existence.
Oh my God, what if it's Captain Archer and it's where Quantum Leap came from?
Stargate. Yeah. I don't know.
He wasn't on Stargate, was he?
No. He was on. Nobody was on it. I was just talking about how they were moving all around. Although that wasn't time, was it? That was just space. I don't think Stargate traveled time.
No, oh, but it boy. Had that element of extraterrestrials being worshipped as gods, right? Because what about the aliens that built the pyramids?
Yeah, the movie was like that. Yeah, they built Egyptian cultures like on several different planets or something, but apparently the one on Earth had overthrown them. But they found them on other planets.
Something, yeah. I don't remember the series. I know MacGyver was on it, but that's about it.
Yeah, MacGyver was on it. All right, we got two episodes down. We need to come up with some predictions, even if they're just wildly off. We got to come up with something, because I need to really be able to hate you again.
I mean, you said Amanda's going to be the Red Angel. That's pretty damn wild.
Oh, I don't think it's going to be that. I was just kind of talking.
I was halfway serious about it being Burnham's mom, and she's not dead.
But that wouldn't make any sense, though. Why would Burnham's mom be traveling time space? The only people who travel time space are Qs. I think we're gonna do a Q thing.
And people on the mycelium network. Maybe it's not Cuba Gooding.
It could be not Cuba Gooding. Who else is in the mycelial network? Do we know of?
Tilly.
Oh my God.
Well, Tilly's in there now, or Tilly's in like a dark matter euphoria. And Clint Howard's probably in there snorting volcanic ash.
Maybe that's, dude, if they made Clint Howard the Red Angel, and that's why he keeps showing up in every series, that would be the best goddamn retcon in Star Trek. No, nay, in sci-fi history. That would be fucking awesome. Yes, that is it. That is why. That's my prediction. I'll go with that.
Oh,
and
boy.
The Tardis dog is his pet. And that's why it showed up just when Discovery needed it. He put it there on the Glen.
The Tardis dog. Well, you think we're gonna make this? Well, we can't make the asteroid. Well, no, we still had the little core sample.
We need to look up the writing nugget. Credits and see if Glenn's last name is Howard.
Well,
I think Glenn is actually an amalgam of actual of writers.
Yeah. No, he's not.
Yeah, because, I mean, we don't have the same writer at all during the show. There's no way it can be Glenn.
No, but they don't change interns.
Interns are uncredited, so.
Mm-hmm. That's true, so we'll never know. Well, I guess his last name is Glenn, right? And we decided it was Glenjamin J. Glenn.
Yes, Glenjamin, that's true.
Yeah.
Glenjamin J. Glenn, yes.
But it's like Homer J. Simpson. His entire middle name is letter J.
From now on, I will be known as Homer Jay Simpson.
All right, so that was it for New Eden clam chowder. And next nice. Week we got what I don't even remember anymore.
Point of light.
Quicker than a ray of light. All right. Monster by Madonna. To keep with the religious theme. All right. We'll be back next week with Ray of Light. Warden, hit it.
This is Joe Bob, Biblio Warden, and Mr. Willie signing off.
Fight and Fury, performed by RJ Wilkes. Used under license from Shutterstock.